Here is a description of the gopis who, on hearing Krishna give ajatma shiksha, or teachings about atma, they became satisfied. And just as they came came to Krishna with great desire and great hope from Vrindavan, and they asked him to return to Vrindavan, and that way they could be satisfied. So here it is said that they were taught by Krishna with these instructions, and somehow or other they seemed to be satisfied, and they understood everything about Krishna, and they became free from false ego and the subtle body by remembering Krishna as the Paramatma within all beings and being all pervading. However, we find there's also a slight discrepancy, because we know that many of the gopis were far beyond the material world and being absorbed and covered with the false ego. Jiva kosha refers to a covering on the jiva. Kosha often refers to the, let's say, the kosha of a seed, the covering on the seed. Or if we have the corn and we have the leaves on around the corn, so the corn has a kosha, a sheath of some sort which covers it. So the jiva is covered up by another sheath, layers. So what are the layers around the jiva? These jivas are the material body, the subtle body and the gross body. Or of course we have the other koshas, the Anandamaya kosha, and the we have the Vijnanamaya kosha, and the Gyanamaya kosha, and the Pranamaya kosha, and the Anandamaya kosha, and different layers covering the jiva. The jiva is separate from these things. It actually is a spiritual particle, and these koshas are more or less an obstruction, you can say. So when we talk about the jiva kosha, this refers to the subtle body, which is a material thing, a material composition of material elements. And it actually obstructs the jiva as far as being in the spiritual world is concerned. So if one is in the spiritual world, one must give up the kosha, the jiva kosha, that is the subtle body. And only when we destroy the subtle body, we get liberation, even in Brahman. To destroy the subtle body, get rid of mind, intelligence, and false ego. So this jiva kosha is contamination. However, we also know that anyone who directly associates with Krishna must be already beyond the material world, beyond Brahman, beyond Karma. To associate directly with Krishna, one has to be very, very advanced, beyond the material world. So how is it possible that the gopis had subtle bodies of material energy, and suddenly by practice they were able to give it up? So, of course, we have two types of living entities who associate with Krishna. We have the Nitya Siddhas, and we have the Sadhana Siddhas, who attain Krishna by sadhana. And we also have some very, very fortunate entities who associate with Krishna, and they're almost pure, but they're at a very, very high level. So those associates, we can say, may have some sort of jiva kosha, very, very subtle covering, very small contamination, but it's almost negligible. And when they associate with Krishna, then of course that's completely dissolved. By association with Krishna and the other siddha devotees, then they become completely purified. And they have only spiritual bodies after that point. So they don't have material bodies, even subtle bodies, when they become purified by association. So in any case, for direct relationships with Krishna in the spiritual world, one must have only spiritual body with no material covering at all. So therefore, to speak of the jiva koshas of the gopis who were actually with Krishna and Vrindavan already, and here still having jiva koshas, seems a little bit strange. It's described that, of course, in when Krishna was in Vrindavan, then there were Nityasiddha gopis there, and Nityasiddha other types of inhabitants in Vrindavan also. And there were those who were also advancing from sadhana up to the position of gopis. And when we, from the descriptions of Krishna, we see that when he played his flute at night, then all the gopis ran off to the forest to meet Krishna. Some gopis didn't go. They tried to go, but they were locked up in their houses by their parents. So this explained, and then those gopis who were in their houses, locked up, they meditated on Krishna, and they were thinking of Krishna, even in spite of the fact that they were locked up. But then it says they left their bodies. So it is explained that we cannot take that literally, because to have death in Vrindavan on the night of the Rasalila would have been very inauspicious. So how could any death of gopis take place at all? So it's described that what happened was that by that meditation and separation on Krishna, they dissolved the last impurities. And that in other words, they left the last traces of material contamination away. And that's kind of what it says, when they gave up their material bodies. And they attained pure spiritual bodies by that. And then they went to Krishna. So in other words, those gopis who met Krishna finally, they, after being locked up and they escaped, then they were actually pure over. And the last traces of material covering were dissolved. So the gopis started to become pure. Of course, many were pure to begin with as nityasiddhas. Others, they became pure. Of course, some also became pure simply by association with other devotees. And those that had a little trace of impurity, that was burned up by their separation from Krishna, and then they became pure. So therefore, it is not proper to actually think of the gopis as still being contaminated after so many years of separation from Krishna. However, we see this is the case also of other inhabitants in Vrindavan. They are, sometimes they will say, "Oh, we are so fallen. We take birth after birth in this material world, and by good fortune we have met Krishna in this lifetime, and we've associated with Krishna. Still we are contaminated by material energy, and we're thinking of our families, and we hope that eventually we can become purified and attain the spiritual world." So we find this expression of believing they are in the material world, and caught in the material energy, and having material bodies. So this actually is not real. It is only an expression of the identity of the with material energy by these inhabitants of Vrindavan, but it's not real. They're actually much beyond the material world. Anyone who associates with the Lord directly is completely pure. So therefore, those statements are made only as part of the pastimes of the Lord, where they identify themselves as cowherd men and women, and they think we are only cowherd people, and we're not great sages, and we don't meditate, we're not yogis, and we don't know anything about philosophy, so we are trapped in this material world in samsara. They feel like that. But actually, they are far beyond any of the sages and Brahma bodies or anyone. So we should not take those statements too seriously that allude to the fact that the inhabitants from the Vrindavan are anyway conditioned. They are much superior to anyone else. So here, the gopis were given instructions by Krishna, Ajatma Siksha, which actually is inferior to even bhakti. The instruction of bhakti is simply surrender unto me, and I will save you. But Krishna is speaking, you won't meditate upon my all-pervasive feature, and you will see me everywhere. So even in separation, you will understand that I am present, just as the elements are present in all of the objects of this world. So I am present everywhere. So this is for the jnanis and the yogis. And this is the instruction that Krishna gave the gopis. So how is it that they would simply follow those instructions and then attain perfection? Not possible, because the devotees avoid other sadhanas. Even if they're instructed to do sadhana, they will not do the sadhanas of jnana and karma and yoga. The real devotees will simply continue to worship the Lord. That is their only satisfaction. Well, therefore, the gopis ultimately will only continue to love and worship Krishna. That is the only solution. So to get the instructions on Adhyatma is not proper for them at all. Then they would be mixed devotees if they start doing yoga or jnana. So it's not possible, actually. However, this appearance is put there in the Bhagavatam, just as said the Bhagavatam sometimes hides the actual facts, and Krishna also hides the facts sometimes by giving contrary instructions. And by this, of course, he satisfies the jnanis and the yogis, and those who are real devotees will understand, oh, this is Krishna, he's only joking with us, he's only tricking us, that's all. He's playing with us by making these statements. Actually, what he really means is that we are superior to all of this. So this is the understanding of the great devotees, and this is the understanding of people who read the Bhagavatam, who have devotion, that they understand all these instructions on jnana and yoga are secondary, and they're not meant for the real devotees of the Lord. So the devotees of the Lord, already because of their association with Krishna and Vrindavan, were completely beyond the material modes and the subtle body of jiva kosha, etc. They were not anyway contaminated. However, they will also accept that position of being lowly beings. As Lord Chaitanya expresses in Sri Sastakam, the devotee thinks, I am lower than the straw in the street, and more tolerant than the tree, etc. They don't put themselves in a very high position. And this is particularly true for the inhabitants of Vrindavan, because they simply identify themselves as cowherd men and women. We are simple folk, we are not philosophers or anything, and we simply love Krishna, that's all. So therefore they will often identify themselves as not being very advanced spiritually and having to get free of the material world. But at the same time, we can understand that they are the most advanced devotees of all. And this is the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam, to show Krishna as supreme in Vrindavan, and to show the devotees of Vrindavan as the highest devotees of all. They are the supreme devotees. And therefore, anyone who wants to attain Krishna should follow after those devotees of Vrindavan. What do we follow? We follow that mood of complete surrender to Krishna without any other aspiration. Simply trying to love and serve Krishna at all times. So that is the example of the gopis. No matter what happens, they remain dedicated to Krishna. So even though there was separation for long years, almost 100 years, they never forgot Krishna. Their mind did not deviate to anything else. They did not think, we will give up Krishna because Krishna has forgotten us. They kept remembering him. And because of the strength of that memory, then they even came to meet him in Kurukshetra. And even after they went back again, he sent them back home. Still, they did not give up remembrance of Krishna. And they continued again after remembering him. And that is also expressed by Lord Chaitanya, where he says in the last of the Shastric verses, that no matter how roughly Krishna treats me, I will still remain loyal to him. I will think of him as his devotee at all times. So even though Krishna breaks the heart of the gopis, they never give up their attachment to him. This is the strength of their love. So here it says, by their constant remembrance of them, they dissolve their jiva koshas. But that is, we cannot take that literally, because already they were constantly remembering Krishna even before this point in time. Those who were impure, of course, yes, they dissolved their jiva koshas long before this, and others were nitya siddha. So therefore, the inhabitants of Vrindavan and the gopis are actually the highest devotees. And the separation from Krishna, that prolonged separation, is there to illustrate their highest degree of devotion, because they never gave up Krishna, in spite of the fact that people can accuse Krishna of being a liar and not fulfilling his promise of coming back or whatever. They did not deviate from their devotion to Krishna in spite of that long, long separation. And here again, when he meets them in Kurukshetra, they do not give up again in spite of the fact that Krishna cannot fully express himself with the gopis in Kurukshetra, as he did in Vrindavan, still, they do not give up their love of Krishna. They are somewhat satisfied, and then they go back to Vrindavan again, and then Krishna finally comes. So, this prolonged separation is there to show that intense, unfailing attachment to Krishna in all cases. Yeah? And that is the symptom of the highest type of love. There is never any faltering in that love, in spite of all sorts of contrary circumstances or whatever. So this is, you can say, a contrary circumstance where there's a separation. But the gopis never lose their faith in the Supreme Lord. In the material world, of course, we start out with a little faith and we develop our bhakti. If we are unsteady, then the faith will shake. The Kanishtha Adhikari has got komala shraddha. So his faith is sometimes there, sometimes not there. So we struggle with faith. And then eventually, if we reach nishtha, that faith is steady. Still, it is not 100% pure, but it's steady at least in most cases. We don't deviate. But the perfection is in prema. Then there's no deviation. And when it comes to Krishna, then it's a little exceptional. Of course, we can have prema for Vishnu, or Nishama, or Rama, or Krishna, any form of God we can have prema for. And it's all pure, it's all 100% steady. But with Krishna, it is a little bit different, you see, because we have these pastimes where Krishna will especially test the devotees in great circumstances, such as separation like this for long periods of time, which is quite extraordinary, which we won't find in the other avatars. We won't find this extensive separation. This is something which is unique to Krishna. And, in spite of that, the devotees do not lose their faith in Krishna. Rather, the intensity of their love simply increases. So that is the special quality of the devotees of Krishna. Their love is so pure and constant that it simply increases no matter what happens. So that is the special nature of Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. The unique form of prema. So that is what is expressed here in this whole lila of the meeting of Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Okay.
Can you explain, communication things that explain that the soul is a mighty particle and things like this. But then, hearing all the pastimes of Krishna, there are these people and gopis.
How can a particle be a person?
Yeah.
Well, the Atman is described as a small particle, smaller than 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. Huh? And such things, all called anu, a particle. These things, that these descriptions we should take not literally in one sense, because ultimately the soul cannot be defined in terms of material objects anyway. So we cannot say, 0.00 part of an inch or whatever. See, that's a material dimension relative to some other thing in the material world. And the soul is actually a spiritual thing, so we can't get a ruler and measure the soul. It's really impossible. And even if we try to use an atom or an electron, it's still impossible, because that is also a material dimension. So those examples were given to show that, yes, the soul is very sukshma. It is very difficult to see. It is very difficult to measure in the material world. We cannot even see it. And secondly, those comparisons are given to show that the jiva is different from the Lord. In other words, the jiva is small in comparison to the Lord, or he doesn't have the same power as the Lord. So, to show that the jiva is conscious like the Lord, but dependent, therefore these examples of being very small are given. We never call the Lord Anu. He is Vibhu. He is very great. So the Lord is big and the jiva is small. So that's to show the relative status of not so much dimension, but status. Huh? So in the spiritual world, it is rather meaningless to speak of dimensions, because dimensions, what we think of dimensions, are all much relatively material things. Huh? And of course, in the spiritual world, the Lord is unlimited. So, but yet he has a certain size in one sense, because he has a form, etc. And everyone is related to that. So they have suitable forms to serve the Supreme Lord. So those who are worshippers of Rama have forms suitable for worshipping Rama. And those who are worshipping Krishna have forms suitable for worshipping Krishna. So that all depends upon the bhava, or the emotional relationship of the devotee with the Lord. And depending on that, then he has, that's his sarup or his form. But we can't define it in terms of material size or big or small or whatever. It's only in relation to the Lord. And that relationship, what his bhava, what his rasa is, his particular mood in serving the Lord, that defines his form. And we can't put material things only in relation to Krishna. We can say Krishna's form is this big and then the devotee's form is this big, but that's about all we can say. So this big and small is more or less there in the material world to express the fact that the jiva, he cannot see him with the material eye, and secondly, that in relation to the Lord, he is dependent. He is not all-powerful. The koshas. That's not so much described in our literatures as there in the Upanishad. The Taittiriya Upanishad especially talks about the koshas, and sometimes in yoga also they talk about the koshas. There's somewhat mentioned in the Bhagavatam, like in here, the jiva kosha it calls, but they don't get into detail about these five layers. So they are, as I said, coverings. So we have the Annamaya Kosha, and the Pranamaya Kosha, and the Manamaya Kosha, and the Ganamaya, and the Vijnanamaya, and the Nandamaya Koshas. They're different coverings on the jivas, on the jiva. So we can equate that to consciousness, levels of consciousness, and also to bodies, or coverings on the jiva. In other words, we can associate the consciousness with a certain covering, or let's say even a body of the jiva, just as we have a gross and subtle body. Yeah? So we can say that the gross body is the annamaya kosha. This is one covering on the soul, on food, matter. Yeah? And then we have prana, which is also matter, but a little more subtle, and we can't really see it in the same way as we can see the gross elements mixed up in our body. Prana is a transformation of vayu element mixed with the other elements, but we can't see that with our eyes. We're accustomed to the gross objects, so that has a certain function also. It's also a body. So that's where the chakras exist and other things like that, on the subtle body. So there, and that prana arsa is very intimately related with the gross body. If you don't have your prana, then the gross body won't operate. So without that level of the subtle body, then the gross body doesn't operate. And it is related to vayu, and therefore the air and the prana, by breathing in, that also affects that body. And therefore it consequently affects this body as well. So we have the prana layer, which is there in Ayurveda as well, except the pranas. They have different functions in the body. And they help support the digestion, circulation, excretion, breathing, etc. in the body. So that these are, let's say, the lower levels, the Annamaya Kosha, the Pranamaya Kosha. Then we have higher levels, Manamaya. That mana, of course, means mind. We have mind, and then we have Jnana and Vijnana, and then Ananda. So a mind, of course, means emotions. So sometimes they speak of an emotional body, that we do have an emotional body as well, not this body, but it's an emotional body. And some people who deal with chakras also think in terms of the emotional body and the pranic body, etc. They divide the body up that way. So you have another body beyond the pranic body, which is basically an emotional level, and all the emotions, you can say, stem from there and also affect the gross body. Positive and negative emotions will affect the gross body. So there's another body. And then higher than that we have intellect, jnana, which is a higher body. Just as we have, you know, and we have a mind, intelligence, false egos, we have another body there. And it's also a subtle body, part of the subtle body, and it operates like a body as well. And this power, that has the power of discrimination. We can use intelligence to judge things. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, etc. Emotion is not like that. It's I like, I dislike. This is this is good, this is bad based upon my emotions. It's different from this is good, this is bad based upon discrimination, which means reasoning. So one is objective and one is subjective, we can say. Emotion is subjective and intellect is objective. So it is very helpful for the jiva. And then vijnana, of course, means specialized knowledge, higher knowledge. So this is approaching, we can say, spiritual knowledge. That we observe spiritual knowledge, we appreciate spiritual knowledge when we read scripture. And then anandamaya generally refers to the spiritual aspect of the jiva, a spiritual covering or whatever, of the jiva, not a material covering anymore. So it's not the same as the other coverings, we could say. It's the spiritual in nature. We say it's the spiritual body of the jiva, as opposed to the other ones which are material.
So
one of
the
Could be. It's not quite explained, but even that chitta is a little ambiguous. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam in several places, especially in relation to the universal form. So it's part of what is called the antakarana, which means the internal organ of perception, which consists of the antakarana is the mind, intelligence, ego, and chitta. So, as I said, they have functions. The mind is I like and dislike, and the intellect is discerning power, and the ego is identification, and the chitta is the consciousness itself, but material consciousness. The consciousness, not the pure consciousness of the jiva, but the contaminated consciousness of the jiva. And then that goes into the false ego and misidentifies and then develops emotions, etc. So, yeah, possibly that is the vijnana, would be the chitta aspect to the contaminated consciousness.
Maharaj, I said that the soul inside the body has form, like has arms and legs.
It's not really described anywhere like that. That you have your spiritual form or your sarupa, which is in the spiritual world, within your body now. As far as I know, I haven't seen any descriptions of that. Usually they say that develops when one goes into the stage of bhava and that manifests at that stage. If it's there, at least it's not manifest in any practical way. Nevertheless, we cannot say that jiva is shapeless also, that he's a little dot or he's shapeless, an obvious thing. This jiva is also unlimited in one sense, so he can adapt to any shape he wants in one sense. It's built off of it as spiritual, and according to your desire, you can change your shape. But as I would think that since our consciousness is so undeveloped at this stage, when we're still identified with the false ego, that any spiritual form would be very, very primitive. Because we're not really thinking in terms of spiritual consciousness, we're thinking in terms of goes to the chitta and the hankara, etc. And it comes out and we're thinking, you know, in the material world, so we're not really identifying too much with that. the atma at that point. So therefore, the sarup could not show much development. And if you go to liberation, mukti, you destroy the subtle body and what you left is atma. But even then, the sarup is very ambiguous. And therefore, life emerges into the Brahman. Because of the no sadhana for specific development of form, spiritual form. So through bhakti, we develop a relationship with the Lord, and then we begin to develop a special form to serve the Lord. But with Brahman, you don't serve anybody, so therefore what is the use of the form? So therefore nothing is developed. So you just merge into Brahman.
Maharaj, the gopis, they are 100% willing, 100% surrender. They have what false ego. So what hope we can have? So how we get rid of false ego?
Well, as I said, this idea of false ego is not, we cannot take that literally for the gopis. That is only a literary device that shows their want, their humility or whatever, if they think they have false ego. But actually, anyone who's associated with the gopis or Nanda or Soda or any of the cowherd men and women or the cowherd boys, if they're associating with Krishna, there's no subtle, gross body, no subtle body at all. And they're completely out of this material world.
So how do we get rid of bhakti? What is our...
Well, we do it through the process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, that's all. Through sadhana bhakti, one goes to bhava bhakti, and bhava bhakti, the ahankara is destroyed. And then prema bhakti is just not there at all.
In yesterday's class, you said that there's a bit of controversy about
Well, we see if you read, for instance, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma, then we find that the position he describes there is the jiva is comes out of Mahavishnu more or less, and this goes back into Mahavishnu, and he describes the jiva as tashta, as being in the middle. His origin is in the middle, not in the spiritual world or the material world. Because the Satashta is on the borderline, and therefore he comes out of Mahavishnu and goes into the material world like that, now that he falls literally from the spiritual world. Of course, we also know that Jiva is Sarup by Nitya Krishna Das, that Jiva is by nature, by his Sarup, the servant of Krishna. But how far literally we can take that to say that we are, you know, in the spiritual world and then we fell down. Yeah, that's why I said there's some controversy there, because like Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes a middle position, more or less, of the origin.
Maharaj, you were saying how the gopis met Krishna after 100 years. They were probably the same age, but my question is that when we reach our swarup in the spiritual world, do we get there at a certain age? Or we don't grow. You know how Krishna and the Kama boys, they grow, and then they reach a certain age and don't grow old anymore.
The growth of Krishna and the cowherd boys takes place in his pastimes in the material world. And when he is born and then he grows up into Kaishora age and then he stops. It does not take place in the spiritual world. Krishna is eternally Kaishora age there. So anyone who enters the pastimes in the spiritual world will also be of a certain age, and that will be fixed. Will never change from that. If one takes place, takes part in the material pastimes when Krishna comes in the material world, then what is a cowherd boy? One would also take birth from a cowherd mother and father and grow up along with Krishna in the same way, up to a certain age and then stop also. How do we know what stage we're at? Well, we can safely assume that people in the material world generally are going to be in the sadhana stage. Bhava is very rare and prema is most rare. So most people are going to be in the sadhana stage. And in some part of the sadhana sakti. In Nectar Devotion, the Rupa Goswami says bhava is very rare. Very rare. Because there you actually see Krishna. And you develop ecstatic symptoms. But one has still got a little impurity. But then if Krishna is so eager to meet the devotee, he comes and meets the devotee anyway, in spite of that small impurity. But prema is no impurity at all, so that's even rarer. But very quickly one will advance from bhava to prema. It's not a slow process, quite quick once one attains bhava. But to get to bhava stage, then bhava is considered rare. Sudurlabha, that is one of the qualities of bhakti. And so that refers to bhava bhakti, very, very rare. Krishna has not revealed himself to everyone. Only after one is highly qualified. So that's why we can say that most of the people who are in the material world will be in the sadhana stage.
If we did come to the middle ground with the different shakti, what is the location of that? You get so much about the legs and down, where is the location?
Well, that's it, yeah, it's like Mahavishnu between the material and spiritual worlds. So the jivas are simply stored in Mahavishnu, and when it's time for them to come out, they come out through universes and enter into the universes, and then they go back again, they come out again, go back again. And that's an eternal process, more or less. So they're just eternally sitting there. And then if they get association with devotees and mercy of Krishna in the material world, then they get out of that, and they go to the spiritual world at that point. Material world is eternally existing also. In other words, the property is eternal and is sitting there. And Mahavishnu is there, and then periodically it is creator, destroy, creator, destroy, creator, destroy. But property is eternal, and then it manifests as material worlds, and then they're destroyed, and created, and destroyed, and jivas come in, and jivas go out. This just goes on forever like this. No beginning, no end. Well, he gives them lack of suffering when they enter the Mahavishnu. Everybody's very peaceful. So he goes on for a life of Brahma, and then he says, well, you had all your chances for billions of lifetimes, now take a little rest. Everyone rests and everyone's peaceful. But then they develop desire again, so then he puts them back in the material world again. And then they have the chances, and the avatars come, and devotees come, and Narada Muni comes to give mercy, and those who are get the mercy and take it, they get out of the material world, and those who are left, and then they go back in Mahavishnu again at the end of Brahma's life, and they sit there for some time, and they come out again. So we can say it's an act of mercy of the Lord, that he destroys everything, and then the jivas don't have any bodies. And it's kind of like liberation, they're all very peaceful. But they're not liberated, actually, they're not pure, and therefore they develop desires, and then their old karmas come back on them again when they get back in the material world. All the karmas from the previous lifetime of Brahma that they had attached to them again, and then they continue their cycle of birth and death where they left off.
Doesn't this process end once? Because Krishna says that when we come here in the material world, when we go back to Bhakti, we never come back.
Yes, so for our individuals, yes. As soon as you get the mercy of a devotee, then you practice bhakti, and then you advance, and then you get prema, then you go to the spiritual world. No coming back.
So, in the future, it won't be a certain point in time when these jivas were coming and going to be exalted?
Well, one would mathematically say that eventually all the jivas would get out, because they would all get prema at a certain point in time. But we cannot say that, because some jivas may not want Krishna ever. It's not that they're all going to eventually automatically want prema, even if they get association with devotees. Demons, sometimes they don't want. Krishna has to kill them before they get out. It's like Shishupala. Didn't want Krishna at all, in spite of Krishna was there. Wouldn't take the mercy, so they killed him, and that's how he got out. So some jivas they don't want. So we cannot say all jivas automatically or sooner or later going to take the bhakti. We can never say that. They may or they may not. And in any case, the argument is that there's infinite number of jivas stored in Mahavishnu, so no matter how many get liberated, still there's a constant supply that could come in from Mahavishnu back in the material world.
Isn't the point of the material world that the conditions of making friends, and they were always in the middle, and what's the...
Well, Yeah, that's a figurative, and I don't know what Bhaktivinoda means, that there's a certain point at which we are kind of stuck in the middle and then we do this. But it's a figurative thing to explain the idea of Tatastra Shakti, which means borderline, situated on the border. So he just says like that, but whether it was a specific time when everyone was in the middle and they didn't come to the material world at all, that I don't know if that's true or not. Of course, the other concept is Anadi Bahir Mukha, being in the material world without a beginning. That's also commonly said in the scriptures. Yeah, Tatastha means that we can choose the material world, and if we choose the material world and become Bahirmukha, or materialistic, and get the coverings of the koshas, the material koshas, still, by association of devotees and then our development of faith, then we can go to the spiritual world. But once we go there, then we don't come back. Mm-hmm. So it's not to touch it in the sense of just go back and forth, back and forth. Not like that. Even the Nityasiddhas, they are also Tatastha Shakti, but just like Krishna guarantees that even the Nityabhadas who are in the material world, if they do bhakti and they develop, then they go to the spiritual world, then they're also mukta there in the spiritual world, and they stay there and they don't come back.
So it's like a neutral, like it's not eternally there, but
in other words, they're Tatastha Shakti still in the sense that they are not Krishna, they're Jiva still, but Krishna guarantees you don't come back at that stage, so they never fall back. They never come back to the material world in that stage, and that's because Krishna endows them with a certain chit shakti out of his love. So they're somewhat different from the jivas in the material world who don't have that shakti. Still, they're dependent on the Lord. They never become the Lord. They're always dependent on the Lord in the spiritual world as well.
But let's say we choose our swarup when we go to the spiritual world if we're born from the Mahavishnu.
What is that?
We don't, can we choose our spiritual form then when we go there because we're not from...
Well, as I said yesterday, generally it is the sadhana. We do a certain sadhana and we have association and we develop a certain attraction for a certain form of the Lord and we continue for many lifetimes in that direction, you know, as a devotee, even birth after birth, we keep worshipping and become more and more pure. So that fixes itself and then we, according to our desire, Krishna responds and gives us a particular form and a particular relationship in the spiritual world.
Okay. I'm going to see.